Ring the bell. Golden Oak Lending has lowered rates. Lower your mortgage payment, get cash out, or pay off credit cards. Visit goldenoaklending.com today.
Golden Oak Lending, cured my blues.
NMLS 114937.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
The Rich Zeoli Show podcast is sponsored by Mike Venaria Jr. with Osperity Private Wealth.
Hi, I'm Mike Venaria Jr., Wealth Management Specialist. Make your retirement dreams a reality by creating your retirement plan today. Call me at 856-252-0107.
All right, when it comes to all things energy, and it was a big week for energy, a big week for deregulation, and a big week for coal, there's always one guy we turn to for all these issues, and that's our man, Daniel Turner, the founder and executive director of Power the Future. My man, it's great to see you, buddy.
Yeah, it's great to be on with you, Rich. Thank you so much for having me back.
Big week. First of all, I got to say, before we even get into the coal stuff, loved hearing Lee Zeldin at the cabinet meeting yesterday talking about the deregulation. He's on fire as the EPA administrator. It's fantastic.
Yeah, he's like the, you know, if you had your March Madness bracket, he's your sleeper. I expected great things from everybody, but Lee Zeldin has really struck, has really broken out as the cabinet member that's been the most, in my mind, the most impressive, taking on a lot of these abuses of the EPA, right? The EPA is one of those agencies that you can weaponize to do your bidding. Mm-hmm. And it takes a backbone to undo a lot of that, because people will always say, well, what about the climate? What about the children? But if you have conviction, you know this is all a load of lies. And Lee Zeldin has that. It's been great to witness.
Now, the president's announcement this week on coal, and I know you have an op-ed on this that you just recently wrote. So this is very important what he's done here. So give us your thoughts on why coal matters, and specifically why American coal matters.
Yeah, I will give this to the environmental left. They've done a wonderful job over the last 30 years of convincing Americans that coal is dirty, it's bad, it causes illness. It's also antiquated, right? People say, you defend coal the way the candle people, you know, were mad when electricity was invented, when the light bulb came on. They give this impression that we don't need coal. There's a lot of, to use the catchword, misinformation. There's a lot of lies when it comes to coal. Coal's the granddaddy of all energy. And when people say, well, to make electricity, we don't need coal, we can use natural gas. Great. We can use natural gas. Try building a natural gas plant without coal. Try building the pipelines to get the natural gas without coal. Try building the equipment that brings the natural gas out of the ground into the pipeline. So you can't build it without coal. When people say, well, we can use nuclear. Great. Try building a nuclear power plant without coal. You can't build cement or steel or rebar or rubber or plastic without coal. So yeah, coal is used to make electricity, but coal is used to make everything. And over the last 20 years, as we've punished coal, look at life in America. It's become more expensive. The grid is weaker. We're more dependent on communist China for our essential goods and services, because we've given up on this core requirement for the energy and manufacturing infrastructure of coal. So it's a really big step to reverse years of of bad policies.
When they talk about clean coal, all right, so that's because we've heard of that phrase a lot this week, Daniel Turner, clean coal. Now, China, they're building coal-fired power plants left and right. Here in America, we're shutting them down. We were shutting them down left and right. We'll get into that in a second. But is there some truth to the idea that our coal is cleaner than, say, coal that's in China that they use at their plants?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, and this is where just advancements in technologies have made that what's emitting from coal plants is trace and not dangerous, right? When people see these plumes, what those plumes are water vapor. We put a lot of precaution, just the way you have your catalytic converter on your car, right? The way the way automobile emissions have gotten remarkably better over time, coal emissions are the same. They're negligible to the overall climate. But you don't have to do that when you're in China, which is why, quite frankly, it's convenient to make steel in China. You can use, terrible environmental practices. You don't have to make sure you're not contaminating groundwater or air. And 9-year-old girls don't require health care or safety goggles, right? So let's build steel and with slave labor in communist China, and we'll just say it's free trade, right? Or we'll say it's climate awareness. Well, we're going green. We're shutting down steel plants across Pennsylvania. Well, you're not going green. You're going globalist. Mm-hmm. And so you're using slave labor and terrible environmental practices, and you're hiding behind that as free trade or climate awareness. The whole thing is a big lie, and President Trump is correcting that lie.
Daniel Turner's with me. Power of the Future. He's the executive director and the founder of Power of the Future. Definitely follow Daniel on X at... Give me your handle. I don't have it in front of me at the moment.
Daniel Turner, PTF for Power of the Future.
PTF. There was a movie when I was a kid that I remember. It was called A Coal Miner's Daughter. And there was a song about this, too. And so you have this image of all these coal miners and black lung and all this health and respiratory illness and disease. How true is all that in this day and age?
We've gotten better, right? But we don't live in this Upton Sinclair period anymore of child labor and awful abuses. Of course, we've gotten better, and that's a testament to even the EPA, and good regulation, and a testament to the industry itself. Is black lung a real illness? Of course, I'm not going to deny that. Of course, it is. But also, the big problem that with this argument never seems to address is there are scales of and costs of offsetting, right? So is coal, does it have drawbacks? Does it have shortcomings? 100%. But so does wind and solar. So does anything. So does nuclear. So does oil, gas. So does hydro, geothermal and hydropower. The question is, what gives you the most amount of electricity at the lowest price point for the least amount of risk? And that weighing those scales is where coal ultimately shines. And so, yeah, there's no doubt that we had a period in America that we were dirtier. Pennsylvania really knows that when you talk about, old steel towns. Were we dirtier at one point? 100%. But we're not there anymore. So why do we continue to pretend that we still live in 1975 Scranton? That's what Joe Biden would always talk about. When I was a kid in Scranton, it was so dirty. Well, but that's not anymore, Mr. President. So rather than chastise us for 50 years ago, how about applaud us for where we are today?
Is that the time that he told everybody he died of cancer?
He did. Yeah, he and all of his friends have cancer, right? Remarkable. And the media just glossed over it and said he's as sharp as a tack, So, and I'm telling your audience right now, even I have cancer. Everyone has cancer. And I have every other disease. If it makes me sympathetic to your audience, you tell me what disease I have, and I have it right now.
Fair enough. We both know we have serious mental illnesses for laughing at that, but that's for a whole other show, Daniel Turner, so we'll be okay with that. The reason why I asked the question is because all week I've heard nothing but support from coal miners, people that work in the coal industry who are thrilled with the president's deregulation this week. I didn't hear any complaints about health and safety. They're just thrilled. And I also heard something interesting from one coal guy who was on TV. I remember when Bill Clinton famously called them the coal people, as if they were some sort of like swamp creature or something, the coal people. This one guy said, I'm tired of this argument that you're going to tell us coal miners, we've got to do something else. This is what we want to do. And that was what the Democrats did for years. Ever since Barack Obama really started the war on coal, it seems to me that they were always trying to tell these people, do something else. Go lay broadband cable. And they're like, I don't want to lay broadband cable. Like, don't tell me what to do with my life. They're ecstatic about the deregulations that were announced this week.
They really are. And their communities have been attacked politically for decades, really, because of this war on coal, which is purely ideological. And that's why Power of the Future, why I started it. And those are the people who I met with and whose stories I felt were not getting told. You know, I go back to, I think it was 7 or 8 years ago when Joe Burrow won the Heisman Trophy. And if college football fans will remember, and he was crying during it because he talked about growing up in Southeast Ohio and poverty and how it was a tough place and everyone was, you know, depressed. And you look at shows like Mayor of Easttown, that really good series, right?
Hillbilly Elegy. Right in our backyard. Yeah.
Absolutely. Hillbilly Elegy, that J.D. Vance's personal story, right? His autobiography. That was allowed to happen. That didn't happen because of free markets and free trade. And that didn't happen because of organic changes. That happened because political entities based in New York and D.C. and San Francisco said, we're going to get rid of this industry because we don't like it. We don't think it should exist anymore in America. And no one ever went to those towns and looked those people in the eyes and said, what did we do to your neighborhood? What do we do to your town, right? The great fellow Pennsylvanian Selena Zito had a Washington Post article this week hitting on that exact topic. When these little towns lose their only source of income, those towns are destroyed and they turn to opioids and they turn to suicide and poverty and depression and their mortgages are underwater and domestic violence starts to increase and their schools are shuttered. And we've done that all across America. Yes, in energy with coal miners especially, but we've done it to manufacturers, we've done it to furniture makers, we've done it to timber industries, looking at you, Oregon. And everyone just said, well, learn to code, do something else, drive for Uber, get an OnlyFans page, right? This is the new economy, and you all have to get used to it. And you know, I don't celebrate what happened to Wall Street these last couple days, but Wall Street is panicking about their portfolio, and they didn't give a damn about the fact that they outsourced these jobs under the guise of climate awareness and plunged millions of people into poverty. So these guys are getting their comeuppance.
By the way, I will say that if a lot of these coal miners had started OnlyFans pages, they'd probably be multimillionaires now. Or at least that's what happens to the women who are teachers and wind up quitting their job and then they're making $40 million a month. I don't know how that's all happening, but again, that's for another show. Let's talk about coal in Pennsylvania. You've done a great job of highlighting a lot of these towns that have been decimated by the war on coal. I don't think people really think of Pennsylvania per se as a coal state, at least not in southeastern PA. We hear a lot about natural gas because we're very close to the Marcellus Shale. We think about Three Mile Island and nuclear. But coal plays an incredibly important part of Pennsylvania's economy. And so the deregulation efforts that were announced by the president this week, the deregulation efforts, and the Pennsylvania Coal Association put out a statement. They were very happy about it as well. So tell us about how this benefits Pennsylvania.
Yeah, because it's a huge coal state and has enormous coal reserves. And if you're able to bring more of it to market and sell it around the world, that's money for the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. If you're able to build power plants or reopen power plants, that will lower the cost of electricity for Pennsylvania. You know, in the last 20 years, America went from the world's largest producer of coal to fifth. And that isn't because the rest of the world got suddenly better at mining coal. It's because we've decided to mine less and less of it. But overall, global coal consumption has nearly doubled. So just America's slice of the pie is getting smaller and smaller as the pie keeps getting bigger and bigger. Why is that good? Why is that green, right? Why does Indonesia, why does China, why does, no offense to Australia, I'm married to an Australian, I love Australia. Why does Australia get to have a larger coal industry than America now? And so Pennsylvania coal miners, you know, there are people around the world who need this critically, critically important resource. If you can mine it in Pennsylvania, it's good for the Commonwealth, it's good for families, it's good for your electric grid. In the 20 years of the war on coal, really, since Obama started it, Electricity prices nationwide have gone up 50%. We get text messages from our governors saying, lower your thermostat, don't do laundry because the grid can't sustain it. Our asthma rates down, our cancer rates down, are all the illnesses they blamed on us, right? It's because of coal, children have, are any of those things changed? No, of course not. We were just the scapegoat, right? So all we've done is make America poorer and weaker since we've punished coal.
Well, it's a great point. Now, let's take New Jersey, for example, because we are all facing huge rate increases this summer, anywhere from 17 to 25%. And I asked my buddy, my friend Eric Ford, who you met with the New Jersey Energy Coalition, and I said, what's the reason? He said, because they shut down all the coal-fired power plants in New Jersey. This was part of, you know, the idiot governor's energy master plan. So we're looking at that. So now they have to bring in power from out of state. So that's why we're looking at this rate increase. And we also subsidize a lot of the green energy nonsense in our electric bills. But we've all switched. You know, we all use LED light bulbs now. We're all using all these Energy Star appliances. And yet our electricity bills keep climbing, Daniel Turner. And that's the mystery that nobody can figure out. But I think you've just touched on it as to why that's the case, because a lot of people are wondering the same thing. I don't get it. I made the switch to the LEDs. I got the energy. Because you have to, because you don't have a choice, right? With the Energy Star appliances, everything's freaking Energy Star nowadays. And yet my energy bills keep going up. Why? Yeah. And I think that's the answer.
Yeah. And this is, you know, maybe this hits us more as we get older and we've been doing this longer and paying bills in our home. But you get to the point that you see another government regulation and the rollout is this will save the average American family more than $800. I've heard that for everything, every industry, everything. The government says, if you do this, you're going to save money in the long run. I've never seen a dime of savings. In fact, it keeps getting, you're absolutely right, more and more expensive. You know, that's an important issue for New Jersey that has an important election coming up, a gubernatorial election. It requires backbone, which is what we love about President Trump and what we love about Lee Zeldin. It requires backbone to stand up for this industry. And if you want to win in governor of New Jersey, ask New Jerseyites after the summer at the shore that you're paying 15, 20, 25% more for electricity. Ask them, do you want to continue on this path? Because it's only going to get worse, right? It's not going to suddenly plateau. Yep. It's just going to continue to go up and continue to go up. And proof of that is we look to our European friends who have been doing this 20 years longer than we have. And they shuttered coal. England just closed its last coal plant. And England is paying nearly 10 times what we pay for electricity now. So if that's the future of the war on coal, then it's time for New Jersey. It's time for Pennsylvania. It's time for all of America to say, I don't want that to be our future anymore.
Before I let you go, one observation that my buddy Ray made. He's a guy that fixes appliances, and he's terrific. And he pointed out to me, because we have a very old refrigerator in the house that we bought. It's one of those old Sub-Zeros from the 1980s, and it's still humming along. And he pointed something out to me that nowadays with refrigerators, they all have warnings on them, warning this fridge could blow up. I mean, have you noticed that? Like, this could blow up, and they were putting this in people's houses. Why are we putting exploding refrigerators in people's houses, Daniel Turner?
Because the government knows better than you. The government knows better. And if you look at the previous administration, Gina McCarthy, when she was the climate czar, the domestic climate czar, she talked about how we have more than 100 of these new regulations coming out targeting appliances. And no one in the press pool said, are you an engineer? Right? Are you the Maytag woman? Man, I'm sorry, I don't want to assume anyone's gender.
Yeah, right? Person.
What do you know about appliances? But they don't. The way your governor doesn't know anything about the electric grid, they say by 2030, 80% of New Jersey's electricity is going to come from, they just put out this crap and it's on the utilities to figure it out and the consumers to pay more. They do the same with appliances. We've decided this is the new rule and the appliance company is going to say, fine, we can conform to it, but check out the price of your refrigerator and it's going to break or explode in the next couple of years. I bought a freezer 2 years ago that's already dying in my garage. My mother's freezer, I think, is from the 1940s and it's still working fine.
Yeah, the worst mistake I ever made in my life was redoing the kitchen in our old house and getting rid of all of those old appliances from the 1960s. And I wish I had never done that looking back because, you know, I had to make my wife happy, obviously, and that's probably more important than having efficient appliances. But, I mean, just the difference in that. So then that touches on something, which is the water deregulation the president announced this week. And we can finally have showers that get us clean and washing machines and dishwashers that will actually get things clean, which would be fantastic. And maybe we can get it hot enough so that we can actually kill things like bed bugs, because we have a bed bug epidemic in America because nothing gets hot enough to kill them. So then I got a question from somebody. So bravo to President Trump on that. I say, you know, make showers great again. I'm all in. Sign me up. Because I had to go in manually, Daniel Turner, and rip that freaking water thing out. And I would take a screwdriver and I would do whatever I had to do to get it out because I like nice water pressure. I'm like Kramer. I'm buying them on the black market if I have to. You know what I mean? But when can we get light bulb freedom again? Because there's a lot of people. I don't particularly mind the LEDs. I don't really notice the difference. But there's a lot of people that want to go back to the incandescent light bulbs.
Yeah, hopefully President Trump has an order rolling out that as well. I think as a builder, a lot of these government rules just drive him up a wall because he doesn't want the government to decide, appliances, light, water, right? He thinks as the builder, the free market would decide those things better. And that's the biggest difference between, left and right now is does government know better or do free markets know better? And why do the government thinks it decides what type of electricity or what type of light bulb or what type of stove or gas hot water heater, etc. It's these huge government mandates that have just made life very expensive. And again, none of those savings have ever been passed on. We were told by Obama 18 years ago that when you pass these new light bulb rules, the average family was going to see a savings of blah, blah, blah. Again, where's the savings?
Yeah. So, you know, I said last question, but this is what happens when you and I get together. We just start going off on tangents. So coal-fired pizza, my people, when they came over here from Italy, coal was cheap. And so some of the greatest pizza in the world is coal-fired. You go up to Connecticut and that the entire pizza mecca up there, and you got places like Sally's and Frank and Pepe's, all these beautiful coal-fired pizzerias. Nowadays, you've got idiots in places like New York City. They will not allow coal-fired pizza places to open up or even to stay in existence. The same with wood-fired as well, because wood is my second favorite. Coal fired, in my opinion, is the granddaddy of all of it. But then wood is a very, very close second. And there's a war on that, too. I mean, in terms of that, they went after natural gas with the stoves. And yeah, they want to tell pizzerias and other restaurants, you can't do wood fired. You can't do coal fired. It's ridiculous.
It is. And the reason why you like the coal-fired pizza is because few things burn hotter than coal.
Right.
And so, you know, that 400-degree temperature, even though the wood can get to 800 or 900 degrees, there's a difference of putting raw dough on hot stone that's 200, 300 degrees hotter.
Yep.
And just what that does in terms of chemical reactions. And nothing is going to change that. But, you know, they outlawed coal-fired pizza plants in New York City. Eric Adams did that a long time ago, as if that's going to change anything. So they've bastardized pizza. It's bad enough they put pineapple and all this crap on it. You know, I am half Italian too, even though my last name is Turner. And I tell people all the time, like, that's flatbread with toppings. Don't call this crap pizza, right? It is not. And you took away our coal, and now you're going to add all these stupid ingredients on top. The pizza wars are, if I didn't do energy and for rural America, I would fight for the protection of pizza.
Well, maybe, buddy, we could start that business on the side, because God knows they need it. They need somebody out there advocating for them. And Portnoy's doing the reviews, but they need an advocate. So maybe we can come up with a business plan. I like it.
I love it. I'm game.
Daniel Turner, follow him on X at Daniel Turner PTF. Power the future. Thanks, brother. Have a great weekend.
Always great to be with you, Rich. Thank you. The
Rich. Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
The Oli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
All right, as we wrap up our fourth and final hour here on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT, thanks for being here today. Appreciate it very, very much. So, you know, the thing about the craziness of life is that we are constantly exposed to spin all the time. I mean, it's just, it's everywhere. And the latest is this idea, this notion that if you're a married woman, you're not going to be able to vote in this country. Now, look, I mean, I'm all for the idea of women not voting. I think the 17th Amendment was a huge mistake, but I'm kidding. Stop it. Stop it. It's Friday night. Come on. And by the way, pizza tonight, I heard this guy on YouTube. I got one of those pizza steels, and I've been using it all wrong. Again, my specialty is the outdoor wood-fired pizza. I'm not really, but first of all, with the foot, I got to be on my scooter. It's raining. I have to. So anyway, we're doing the oven. So I had one of those pizza steels. But what I never realized was you put the steel on the top rack under the broiler. I heard this guy on YouTube today. Listen to this
guy.
Do
not use a pizza stone like this if your oven doesn't have an element on the bottom. What you want.
There he is. What's up?
Go back.
Do not use a pizza stone like this if your oven doesn't have an element on the bottom. What you want is a cast iron pizza steel like this. Put it on the top rack and set your broiler to high at least an hour in advance. Most convection ovens have the element on top, and then a pizza steel is definitely the way to go. Either way, your pizza game is going up, and you're definitely saving money. And look at the bottom.
Beautiful. That's a Chef-inspired events is the guy's name. Chef-inspired events on YouTube. I'm going to try it tonight. I'll let you know how it is on Monday. I'm excited. As we speak, the pizza steel is under the broiler, getting warm as we speak. I'm not very confident, though. I'm not going to lie to you because I made the dough today. And whenever I make the dough the day of, it's a big no-no. It's got to be in the fridge at least overnight. But it was just kind of like a whim thing. It was like, you know, it's a good pizza tonight. It's Friday. It's Lent. And I said, what the heck? You know what I mean? So I got my hair cut for America's Newsroom Monday morning. Had a lot of chat about that on the YouTube stream. Going with the sideburns. I might go mutton chops at some point. So I threw some dough together. I said, let's make a little pizza, you know? We'll see how it turns out tonight. Again, I'm not a huge fan of the day of dough. But I still guarantee you my day of dough is going to be better, far superior than anything, most people's pizza that you could buy, commercially speaking anyway. So I'll give you all the updates. But this notion that women won't be able to vote. And the propaganda press is at it again. I found this from Western Lensman on X, CNN going all in on the propaganda.
More about why this bill is raising these alarm bells among Democrats and voting rights groups.
Yeah, I mean, there's two separate issues. The first is the fact that there's very little evidence that non-citizens are voting regularly in elections. And when they sometimes do, those are largely seen as errors and judgment and really not some kind of concerted effort to try to rig an election. So that's the first thing that voting rights groups are pointing out. The other issue is that you have to prove that you're a citizen of the United States. And the way that you do that is perhaps you can show a real ID that shows you're a citizen, but not every state's real ID has some marker that shows that you are a citizen of the United States. That means perhaps you would have a passport. Half of Americans don't have a passport. There's also a question about if you have an ID that does not show that you were born in the United States, then you can use your birth certificate. But if you are a woman who has changed your name, perhaps after you got married, your birth certificate may not match your ID. So there are these hurdles that exist for people, a burden of...
First of all, why are we giving IDs to people who aren't citizens anyway that would be used in the form of voting? That's number one. I mean, the problem is that we have states that have given driver's licenses to people who are in this country illegally, and that's a problem. So you have to now figure out how you get around that problem. And to get around that problem, you have to prove you're a citizen. Because just having ID is not enough. You have to prove your citizenship. But the whole married woman thing, why don't we ask a married woman, Caroline Leavitt, the White House press secretary, how she feels about that, being a married woman who's about to lose her right to vote.
As you know, yesterday the House passed Act. And many married women, soon to be married women, are concerned that the new voter ID requirements may inhibit their access to the polls. What assurances can you give women voters in America to ease their concerns.
Sure. Well, the SAVE Act, as you mentioned, was passed by the House yesterday. This is the Safeguard American Voter Eligibility Act. I believe I'm getting that correct. And this act is a common sense measure. It would require proof of citizenship for voting in our elections. The Democrats have been fear-mongering about this bill, have been saying that married women, if their name has changed, they didn't change it on their identification, would not be able to vote. That is complete fallacy. There are outlined in the bill about how to avoid that. The president very much supports a common sense solution to ensuring that only citizens can engage in our elections. This is critical to improving the integrity of our elections and also the trust that American citizens need to have in our electoral process. So the president supports this bill, and that is a myth that has been proven wrong by the text of this bill. And I believe some of the co-sponsors of the bill have been very vocal in addressing that. And certainly I myself, as a married woman, would not stand before this podium if their president did not support such a common sense measure.
Oh, Caroline, you just don't want to vote anymore. Who are you kidding? You just don't want to have to vote. Stop it. We see right through you. It's ridiculous, this notion that if you are an American citizen who changes your name because you got married, you're going to lose your right to vote. What an absolutely stupid, stupid notion. But hey, go with it, everybody. Go with it. Go with the fear-mongering. Why not? Caroline just wants to lose her right to vote.
Lord Jesus, please give us the strength, the knowledge, the ability to articulate our words, have fun, and be confident in Jesus' name. Amen. Amen. Okay.
Oh, so she did a prayer before she went out there. All right, so she wasn't going out there to lie about that. I guess she really does want to keep voting. Okay. All right, fair enough. I take it back. She really does want to keep voting. Okay. So then I guess it really is not a problem then. All right. Good. Excellent. Good to know. Good. Okay. What else did I have for you today? I know what I had for you today. The big story, which I think is a huge story, is it's not surprising in the least, if you ask me. It's one of those stories where you hear it and you go, yeah, no, I'm not the least bit surprised about this. Not the least bit surprised. And it comes from a very credible news source known as Just the News, justthenews.com. It's a must-read site. I read it. And it's probably some of the best writing. John Solomon, this one he wrote with his co-writer, Jerry Dunleavy. The title of this is Newly Declassified FBI Memos Detail Concerns and Payments to Russia Collusion Informant. Stephen Halper was motivated in part by monetary compensation and was paid nearly $1.2 million from the FBI over three decades. This informant. Crossfire hurricane here. Here's a little bit about what Jim Jordan had to say about
these documents and seeking out subpoenaing documents. Are you finding that they are as willing as you are to take a good look and maybe have a little bit of come to Jesus moments where they say, man, we didn't realize this.
We have not seen that yet. I mean, you know, you can always hope. You can always hope that the case. But I always like to start with, remember the basics here. You had a presidential campaign. The Clinton campaign, who had hired a law firm. The law firm then went and hired Fusion GPS, a public relations firm, who then went and hired a foreigner, Christopher Steele, who then went out and put together a false document, who then the FBI, Jim Comey, used the false document as a basis to get warrants to go spy on President Trump's campaign. That, to my knowledge, has never happened in American history, but it did. And it was all driven by money from the other campaign and lies to run the opposing campaign, you know, to run a spy operation on the opposing campaign. And now what we have in this release is we have some of the 302s. We have the 1023s. The 302s are where the Mueller FBI, though, during the Mueller investigation, the special counsel interviewed Christopher Steele. So we can look exactly what was said there. Even though we've gotten a lot of that information, the Mueller report and everything else, you actually have the 302. And then you have the 1023s where Steele's handler was talking with Steele and reporting that information, which we know is garbage, but you actually have those documents. So we think that's something new that we've gotten here in this release from Director Patel.
All right.
Since we're going to be talking about
let's go into a little bit of detail on this, shall we? A key FBI informant in the widely debunked Russia collusion case was paid nearly $1.2 million over three decades, was motivated in part by monetary compensation, and continued snitching even after agents concluded he told them an inaccurate story about future Trump National Security Advisor Mike Flynn. All these 700 pages of one-time secret documents, they were classified, obtained by Just the News, turned over by FBI Director Kash Patel to House Judiciary Committee Chairman Jim Jordan after President Donald Trump ordered them declassified at the start of his second administration. They provide the most extensive portrait yet of former FBI informant Stephen Halper, I think is how you say it, a Pentagon consultant and academic who, along with retired British intelligence agent Christopher Steele, was used by Bureau agents to build the Crossfire Hurricane case against Trump and his advisors during the end of the 2016 election and the beginning of President Trump's first term in office. The memos confirm that Halper was the source of one of the most sensational bogus claims to land in the FBI's probe in summer of 2016, that Flynn had left a 2014 foreign meeting with Russian scholar Svetlana Lakova when he was a three-star general leading the Defense Intelligence Agency. FBI agents ultimately deemed Halper's account to be, quote, not plausible and not accurate, but the Bureau proceeded to investigate Flynn, kept paying Halper, and continued to vouch for his veracity as a confidential human source codenamed Mitch. Mitch? That's the guy's code name? I mean, Mitch? You can't get more creative than that. I'm sorry, if I'm going to be an FBI informant, I want a cool code name. I mean, the whole point of being an FBI informant is to have a cool code name. What else is there? What other reason is there? Imagine that, too. It reminds me of that scene in Animal House. It's like, your pledge name is Flounder. Why am I Flounder? Why not? Why Mitch? That's what I'd say. Why is my code name Mitch? Why not? I want something cool, like Dragon Bones or Danger Cross or Jack Carr. Not Mitch. First of all, Mitch, I think of McConnell. That's number one. But this is never a cool, badass name, Mitch. Like, Mitch is the guy who mows your grass for you. If you like, a great guy, great neighbor, great friend. Mitch, can you help me out over here? Mitch isn't a... Anyway, going off on a tangent. For instance, a March 2017 memo showed the FBI's Validation Management Unit wrote that it assesses it is likely Halper is suitable for continued operation based on his or her authenticity, reliability, and control. That memo makes no mention in its unredacted portions of the concerns about the account Halper gave about Flynn and Lakova, which were confirmed in a memo from William Barnett, the FBI agent who handled the retired Flynn's case in 2016 and 2017. Guy was paid more than $1 million. $70,000 by the FBI between August 2016 and the start of February 2017, a time period spanning his activation as an informant targeting the Trump campaign and then the 2016 election and Trump's inauguration. The FBI records also show that the Bureau had paid Halper $1.2 million from the late 90s into early 2017. Crossfire Hurricanes declassified binder. Halper did not respond to a request for comment. The Crossfire Hurricane redacted binder submitted to Congress and obtained by Just the News includes, among other things, slightly less redacted versions of the tasking orders and debriefings of the two main confidential human sources, Halper and Steele. The new documents are certain to raise continued concerns in Congress about the FBI's management and validation of informants, an issue that has been repeatedly flagged by the Justice Department's watchdog. Now, the FBI has something known as the FBI's Validation Management Unit. Dun-dun. It does sound like something out of Law & Order, doesn't it? The VMU. FBI Validation Management Unit. It sounds like a bad Law & Order spinoff. They conducted a human source validation report on Halper in early 2017, and although the declassified document remains heavily redacted, it reveals new information about the FBI's continued expression of trust in Halper. I guess the bottom line is this. I mean, this guy was motivated by two things: money, fazools, and ideology. Ideology. His motivation was monetary compensation and ideology. When the FBI form asked if there was anything that Halper could reasonably be construed as derogatory, including any statements made by the confidential human source, the FBI answered none. DOJ Inspector Michael Horowitz had released a 2019 report concluding that the FBI did not comply with the AG's guidelines, requirements, and its own policies and procedures for managing long-term confidential human sources. I guess the good news about this is it's a very, very long piece, and you know, I could spend hours on it, but I mean, here's the good news about this. This guy obviously hated Trump. He wanted to bring down Trump. He wanted to work with the FBI to bring down Trump. But what the hope I have here is that Kash Patel is now releasing all this stuff. This guy was one of the reasons why Carter Page ultimately was spied on by our government in an unconstitutional spying weaponization. The same thing with George Papadopoulos. And the main goal of the operation is to have Crossfire Dragon, Carter Page, admit that he has direct knowledge of... I mean, that's a cool nickname, by the way, Crossfire Dragon. Better than Mitch. That was the nickname they gave Carter Page as they were spying on him. They wanted him to admit that he was working with the Russians and the Trump team, and they were all together. But then it went from Crossfire Hurricane. If the Page operation failed, it would then change its posture and move forward with an operation against Crossfire Typhoon. And then you had the dossier with Christopher Steele and the ex-Perkins Coie lawyer, Mark Elias. And I mean, it goes on. But the thing about it is that there is no doubt in my mind. You had this guy, Kleinsmith, who falsely edited a CIA email to state that Carter Page was not a source for the CIA when the agency actually had told the Bureau on multiple occasions that Page had been an operational contact for the CIA. Of course, that was the guy who did not go to jail. The judge had felt that he had suffered enough in the public eye, even though he lied, so that an American citizen could be spied on by our government and then the government could infiltrate a presidential campaign. The thing about all of this that gives me hope is that if Kash Patel is going to release all this stuff and we're going to get the truth about all this, that would be wonderful. All these confidential human sources. And I would like to find out about that guy, you know, the one who was telling everybody to go into the Capitol. Tomorrow we go in the Capitol. That would be nice. All these things would be nice. The American people deserve to know. This is our government. They work for us. And I got into this earlier in the show today. You go back and listen to it on podcasts. But Chris Rufo wrote a great piece in the New York Post detailing how the left hides its leadership of fake grassroots Tesla attacks. And there's a lot of them out there. So go back and listen to that, because the attacks against Tesla, this is not some grassroots thing. This is organized, paid for by big Democrat money groups. No question about it. And then lastly, before I get out of here and go I'm going to enjoy this incredible pizza. I have no doubt that it's going to be outstanding. Trump tells Congress they should push for more daylight at the end of the day. Good. I say good. President Trump is weighing and saying the House and the Senate should push hard for more daylight at the end of the day. Very popular. And most importantly, no more changing of the clocks. A big inconvenience, and for our government, a very costly event. Good. Fine. Fine with me. If there's no falling back in November, I, for one, will be thrilled. I, for one, will be thrilled with that. I know it's probably the most controversial thing we'll discuss on the show. No doubt about it. But I still believe it is the right thing to do, because I think daylight in the afternoon is better. And that's not just because I do an afternoon drive show. I just think it's better. I like when I'm done with my show and it's still daylight out. I like that. I know it's controversial. I get it. Or I still have my half hour solution. Split the difference. Split the middle. Do a half hour. Fall back a half hour and then end it. I don't care. Just end it. You know what I mean? But the problem, though, is that you do have some Republicans who are in the central time zone who are not really thrilled about this, because like one guy, I think he said he has something like 12 different counties that are in different time zones in his own state. And he said that if you keep changing the clocks, it's going to mess everybody up. But I think in the end, more people would favor daylight at the end of the day. But either way, change it and be done with it. You take one dip and end it. And that's it. No double dipping on the clocks. No more double dipping on the clocks. This, by the way, is the top story of the day today, brought to you by my buddy, Dr. Mike Veneria, VeneriaDental.com. Go see him today for your perfect smile, VeneriaDental.com. Have a great weekend. Enjoy it. Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla is up next. Please catch me Monday morning on America's Newsroom with Dana Perino and Bill Hemmer sometime between the 9 and 11 time. And enjoy your weekend. Keep the conversation going on X at Rich Zeoli. Thank you.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.